Art Supply Posse. Today's artist, Hannah Austin, creates exquisite landscapes that spark in me a sense of delight and wonder. When I came across her work, I fell in love with it and I just had to know more. There feels like it's just reaching out and grabbing me through the screen, which, you know, sounds crazy, but that's kind of where my mind goes. And I feel like maybe it's I feel like I can reach into the screen, not it reaching out. But you know what I mean. Luckily for me, Hannah was happy to join us here today in the Posse. So hello, Hannah. Welcome so much. And thank you for joining us here in the Art Supply Posse.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be able to talk about art with you.
It's my pleasure. So we're gonna run straight in and go to the big, deep question first, which is, who is Hannah Austin? Let's do it.
Oh gosh, what a loaded question. I have been making things all my life. I had a grandmother who taught me to create things, especially when I said I was bored. So I've been doing artistic things all my life, but I'm actually not an artist by like trade necessarily. Like, I didn't go to art school. Mm-hmm. I actually went to college for music education. So I taught elementary music, beginning band and beginning choir for several years. And then I just kind of got a little burned out. And that coincided with when my family was starting to grow, when we found out mm-hmm. we were pregnant with our first child. And so it just made sense for me to leave teaching and be a stay-at-home mom for a little bit. And then the transition to motherhood, it was beautiful and I love my children, it was really isolating and lonely, which mm-hmm. I think a lot of women feel.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I all of a sudden felt like I just didn't really have a sense of purpose outside of my little kid. And so I started picking up embroidery again. I used to quilt, for fun. I would do landscape quilts and I don't have many pictures of them because it was in the age before instant, mm-hmm. you know, before mm-hmm. the camera was on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just started working on little embroidery hoops with fabric layering, because it was safe to be around my kids. I could put it up high somewhere, you know, it's just one needle. I wasn't pinning pieces of fabric on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I just started making them anytime there was a nap, and it gave me a little bit of a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. And I started sharing them on social media, not really thinking anything of it. And my friends encouraged me to start a business. And that was in February of 2019. So my small business is 4 as of last month, which is kind of exciting.
That's exciting. You've got a toddler business.
Yeah. So I've been a full-time artist. I'm really lucky that the pandemic, I switched to making masks during the pandemic because I had a lot of anxiety, as did most of the world. Mm-hmm. And I was sewing face masks constantly. I switched gears and I did that. And thankfully, I grew a little bit on social media and I was like, I'm going to go back to the stuff I used to make. I hope you're okay with it. And everybody stayed with me. So, and then just because of the pandemic, people were buying art all of a sudden and supporting artists because we didn't have much to do outside of our homes.
Yeah.
And so I went full time in, the summer of 2020. So I've been a full time artist now, for a really long time. I mean, for me, it feels like a long time.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said that your quilts were landscapes. Goodness me. I can't even speak today. Landscape quilts, because primarily, your embroidery work is landscape based. So what is it about landscapes that calls you, do you think?
I just love nature. I don't know. It's like, if I'm in a bad mood, I'm going to go for a hike. If my kids are feeling stressed out, we go outside. Like, just being rooted back to nature is something that's always been calming for me. Mm. And I mean, it's so beautiful, right? It's nature's art. A sunset is like one of the most beautiful things you can ever see, and you get mm-hmm. to see one every day. And so, yeah, I used to make like seascape ones and sunsets, and I just always loved them. And then we moved My husband ended up getting into University of Oregon for his PhD. And so we lived in the Midwest. I'm originally from the Chicago area, but we lived in Iowa for about 10 years. And he got into this program where, like, let's pick up our family and move. Let's just do it. So we decided to take like a month and we drove across the United States to the West.
Wow.
And we took our time and we stopped at so many beautiful national parks and state parks. And I was so inspired by it that I was like, I think I just want to make landscapes my thing. I feel like that's just, it's wide enough of a scope because, I mean, how many landscapes are there in the world? And then when you drive into Oregon from the Midwest, a lot of people don't know this outside of the state, but the west side of the, like the west half of the state of Oregon before you get to like the top of the mountains is desert. It's like lava fields and dry and arid. It's not what you expect. And so we started driving and in my mind, Oregon is like this green, lush, beautiful place, forests. And so we crossed the border, we took a picture with the sign, and then both of us were driving, and it was like, this is not what's happening. And so we kind of felt a little gutted for a little bit. And then you get up to the Cascades and you crest over what's Bend, Oregon, and then you see this stunning view of just this like beautiful green. I mean, it took our breaths away. I cried, actually. Yeah. And I was just like, the sense of home that I felt when we had finally seen the western part of the state. Sorry. So the eastern part of the state, I think I might have misspoke. The eastern part of the state, when you're driving into it, is the desert part. And the western part is lush and green. And yeah. And so actually then my name, Needle or Thread, the or stands for Oregon because I just love this state so much. Yeah. And because a lot of my pieces are inspired by this state and things that I see in this state, not all of them, but the majority. So yeah.
As an Australian who's actually never been to Oregon, I have been to America, but you know, of course there's just so much. My imagery is of lush greenery. So I would have felt, if I had done that drive, I would be like, no, I've been lied to all these years. What is going on?
It just was like the weirdest experience for us. And I had no idea until we moved here. So that's kind of a fun little fact, is that when you travel across from the Midwest and you're driving west, that the eastern part of the state is just, it's really cool. The lava fields are very cool to see.
Yeah.
Not what I thought.
it's fascinating, isn't it? This, like, of course we love planes because we get to places so much quicker, but this thing about being in the vehicle, being on the road, and I guess I'm a cyclist, and there is something completely different from getting out of my car and riding my bike in the exact same place, right? But you're not enclosed, you're in nature, you're in the world, and then conversely flipping that and walking my dogs in the same place is different again. Like there is just,
it's so different.
Landscapes have so many different layers and different levels depending on what you're doing when you're within that space, let alone the time of day and the weather, and there's just so many variables. I think you would never stop having landscapes to turn into embroidery because
Well, and I think, you know, I have dipped my toes into some other things, popular fan art kind of things. I recently made one of Howl's Moving Castle, which is
I just saw that today, actually.
And that's, I mean, it was still a landscape. I still made it my own, but that was from like a specific scene in that movie. So I do every once in a while kind of veer a little bit, but it never gets old. I never get tired of dreaming up different kinds of landscapes. Isn't that just like the beauty of the outside?
Yeah.
It's just really cool. Nature's amazing. So
you touched on embroidery being a thing you could do because of the safety aspect, right? You know, young children, Needles, not a good combination, but also young children and, oh, I don't know, oil paints and all sorts of things. Like, it could get incredibly scary toxic. So do you think, like, I'm sort of thinking, why is it that embroidery has held your heart so much? Is it, because I imagine it's still probably not necessarily all about the fact that it is so safe when you're looking at kids. So you've fallen in love with it, where you sort of, you went from quilting to embroidery. What keeps you there, do you think?
I mean, I think a huge part, the reason why I do fabric collage specifically with embroidery, I inherited my grandmother, who, again, she inspires a lot of what I do. She was my person. Incredibly, she was that, like, Jill of all trades. She did everything, and she did it well. And she, I don't know, she never slept. I'm just convinced, because she did, like, all of the things. And she taught me to embroider at a really young age and to quilt. And so it's kind of like mini little quilts in my eyes. And when she passed away, I inherited a lot of her stuff.
Yeah.
And when I've had friends who've had family members that have passed who also embroider or cross stitch or quilt, and they don't know where to give it, I've inherited a lot of stuff.
Oh, wow.
I'm very blessed. And the legacy that I hold on to of using people's supplies, I don't take that lightly at all. Yeah. And I loved the idea of being able to highlight special, like, vintage pieces of fabric or sequins or beads. Because I feel like it's kind of a way to, like, keep them with us. Yeah. And, and I just think embroidery is, because it's, like, a very travel friendly craft. Mm. Like, you can throw it all into a bag. It's safe to do on airplanes. In the car, I mean, anywhere. Like, when I will take it with me and I'll sit and stitch while I'm waiting to pick up my kids from school. So I think just that aspect of it, I love that I can take it anywhere. And I also just really like, from, like, a modern woman perspective, I really like kind of pushing the boundaries of what we consider to be fine art or, like, a craft, as if a craft is less than.
Yeah.
And I think that embroidery, like, just hand sewn anything, any kind of form of that, was just usually deemed as something that you did just for fun. And, like, it wasn't really valued monetarily. And there's so many of us, I think, that are kind of questioning that now, because it is hard work and it does take time and it is art.
Yes.
it doesn't ever lose its sense of, like, wonder and purpose to me. I every once in a while I'll kind of get a little burnt out from stitching and I'll take a little break, but when I get back to it again, it just feels like I'm coming home. So
I find myself, as I browse through your work, and it is so intricate and so detailed, and obviously these aren't huge pieces either. Like, there's so much detail encapsulated in such a small space. I find myself wondering, how long do they take you to make? Like, because you've just said it, right? Like, there is so much blood, sweat, and tears in each piece of artwork that you're creating. And because it is so detailed, like, is this something that would, I don't know, like, I've never even tried embroidery like that before. So I've got no idea. Are we talking 10 hours? Are we talking 100 hours? Like, what are we roughly talking?
I wish I could. I can't pivot my computer screen, but I happen to also be a distributor for a hoop company. And so I'm staring, like, above the computer as my giant wall of hoops. And so it really depends on the size of the hoop and how much detail I add. So, like, the smallest size is like 4 inches. Mm-hmm. I'll grab one so I can show you.
Yep. Okay.
So it's like, it's this size. And I can finish one of this with, like, between 4 to 6 layers of fabric in it. I can usually finish one if I'm just, like, wanting to get something done quickly. Like, I can get one done in, like, 5 hours.
Okay. Yep.
But that would be very minimal, like, not very much detail. But I have one that I did during a workshop, for example. Mm-hmm. I taught a 4-hour workshop, and I did This one probably actually took like 6 hours.
Oh, wow.
And it doesn't have a ton of detail. This is like utilizing the fabric print, which is one of the reasons why I love fabric collage so much. But I'm trying to think if I have another one that I can show you that's like the same. But that would be like the fastest I could do one of these.
Yeah.
If I like was stitching as quickly as I could and I wasn't interrupted or distracted. but the reality is most of the pieces that I make from start to finish, which I mean like includes cutting the fabric and like
figuring out the layering, because it's not just stitching, right? There's so much more to it, I think. And this is the thing. And there's so much to it.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I think I offer kits and I find that when people order kits and they actually make one, they finally realize like, wow, this takes a lot longer than I thought it would. Yes. Sticking the fabric takes hours. And depending if it's a larger piece, it will take me a long time. But usually the average is actually between like 5 to 10 hours for smaller pieces. Mm-hmm. I recently made a very large hoop. It's it ends up being like about 29 inches when it's in the frame. And that piece alone took me like 300 hours. So,
oh, wow. That's incredible.
Perspective wise. Yeah. And that was just active stitch time. I think if I would have included like how many times it took me to actually mount the thing and like all of the finishing stuff, it was way longer, but I stopped counting because it kind of got a little depressing to think about how much time I was spending.
Yeah, sometimes those details are best forgotten.
Yeah, well, and like the other part of it is like in order to thrive, if an artist is utilizing social media as a way to promote their work, especially if they're doing it for profit, right? Like if you want to sell your pieces. The other part of it is it takes longer because then you have to video yourself.
Yeah.
You have to like take pictures and like, especially if you want to show process things. And so it's like, it takes even longer outside of just the art making itself.
Yes.
And so then it slows down the whole process, but like it's an active part of it too, I think is really important for any artist who's trying to figure out a way to make a go of it by utilizing social media, because that, I mean, let's face it, that's the way that we are able to market ourselves these days.
Yeah, of course.
So
what's like, let's say you get an idea, you've gone for a hike, you've hit upon an idea for a new piece. Sort of break down for us, like, what's that process like? Are you going, right, do you start with what size and then fabric selection, like or colors, like what, how, why?
That's a really good question. I often actually am inspired by one piece of fabric first.
Ah, okay.
Which sounds kind of crazy, but
no, it doesn't.
If I find one piece of fabric that I just fall head over heels in love with and I have to use it some way, I will build an idea just around that specific piece first. For example, one of the ones that I use in a kit that I offer is it's a rainbow batik fabric. Mm-hmm. So it's been hand painted.
Running.
And then like they use wax to dye. It's a phenomenal process. And I saw this fabric and I thought, infinite amounts of skies.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's like a cotton candy kind of sky here. This is like a sunrise and this is like a sunset. I mean, it had everything in it. And I knew immediately when I saw it, I'm going to buy as much of that fabric as I can and I'm going to make kits with it because, which is true. Anytime I see it for sale somewhere, I will buy it as much as I can because that's probably my number one selling kit. I cut it, I make it for other people all the time to be able to make it themselves. And it makes it so beautiful already. And like, it can be a pain in the butt to cut fabric because unlike some other medium where you can just fix it if you don't like what you do, you can cut and you don't like what it is.
Too bad.
You can, I guess, try and sew it together and start over or I guess use fabric glue. But so I think that's the most intimidating part for a lot of people. So I'll usually start with that. So usually inspired by one piece of fabric, or it's like an idea or a specific place.
Mm.
It takes me a while to settle on the size because if I have a larger hoop, I can use more fabric.
Yeah.
So if I think that I want to have lots of layers, if I want to try and to give a little bit more of a perspective, so lots of layers that kind of provide dimension, then I'll use a larger hoop. But I actually prefer working in smaller pieces and seeing how much detail I can get into them. It's like a personal challenge. Or it'll just be a collection idea and I'll run with it, which is actually how Aurora Escapes, for example, because I was inspired by the Northern Lights. That whole series started because I just loved the idea of figuring out how to make them look realistic in in an art form that doesn't have that.
No.
And I found a thread that I really enjoyed that I thought, oh, I think this would look like it if people move the piece. So it kind of all depends. It's not always the same for me. And I think one thing that's different about the kind of art that I do versus like a more standard embroidery that doesn't have fabric, I do not draw out anything before I start, which kind of, I actually just start cutting, and which I think very terrifying to a lot of other people, but I've been doing it for so long now. If I have like an idea in my head, I can kind of cut to get to a specific idea, and you can always trim a little bit more back later. But I don't actually put anything down on paper. I don't design it first. I just run with it and hope that it turns out. And luckily it hasn't gone too terribly. Every once in a while I'll cut something that I absolutely hate, and then I'll save the fabric and hope that I can make something different with it. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. I will sit with a pile of fabric, and actually if you can see my office, it is a disaster right now, but, what you cannot see because my chair is in the way, even if I tried to tilt the camera, is my floor right now is just covered in fabric. It looks like someone broke into my house, actually. and like to give you an example, like here's one pile. Like,
oh, that's just magic. That just makes me just sigh and just, I'm just crushing on fabric lately. And it's just like, oh my goodness me. So jealous now.
And I usually don't buy large portions of it, which is the other thing that I love about this craft, is you can buy a tiny little amount or use a tiny amount.
It's
just really small pieces. But because I'm making kits now and I offer fabric packs for people because they love the fabrics that I buy, now I'm all of a sudden buying on a larger scale to help other people. And so my office just it's a bit overwhelming right now. I'm kind of glad you can't see it, to be honest.
Well, it's a good problem to have, right? Like, it means that people are loving what you do and they want more of it. So we've got to look at it this way.
It is for sure. It's for sure a wonderful thing.
So if you're teaching a workshop, let's say, and you don't draw stuff out before you cut, what about your students? Are you just saying, go in there and cut? Or do you actually go, okay, let me guide you through this? Because I imagine there would be a lot of scared people.
Yeah. So also, great question. When I go into a workshop, most of them will be based on one kit. So everyone gets the same fabric and then we work on it together. And I always have 1 to 2 finished hoops with me I will hold up and show to people. Like, if you get overwhelmed by having to cut, if you are terrified about cutting, you can look at this piece and make cuts based on what you see.
Yes. Yeah.
And they also get a PDF that has very detailed instructions with pictures of me doing every step. So they can like match their hands to what they see on the PDF. And then there's also YouTube videos that they get links to in my workshops in the event that like they need even more of the ability to like play something and stop and do cut for cut the same as I do. Every once in a while I'll do a workshop that's more of like an intermediate level one where I bring all of my fabric scraps a lot of things get donated to me. So I will bring tubs of fabric with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I will just tell people, you can take as much as you want. You can use as much as you want. You can do whatever you want. And I walk around then and kind of help them.
Yeah.
And usually those people have taken a workshop with me before and kind of have like a general idea. But I do give like the directions that I give oftentimes, especially if we're cutting, let's say like a mountain scene,
mm-hmm.
I will tell them, do not try to make perfect angles. Do not try and make perfect triangles.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what a mountain looks like.
Nope.
Cut in random angles. It will look weird at first. And when you add like the third layer of it, it'll look magical.
Yeah.
And then the fear in people's eyes when I say that is very real. But I also like to remind them, because I have lots of fabric scraps, it's like, if you make a wrong cut, it's fine. We'll just find another piece for you and you'll try again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one of the best ways to learn. So.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that fear is understandable, right? Because as you said, you cut fabric, well, that's it, too bad. But also,
yes,
I think part of it is because, so, you know how a lot of people say when they're presented with a brand new sketchbook or a brand new notebook, it's got nothing in it, and they get overwhelmed with fear and like, oh my goodness, like, what am I going to do? I'm going to destroy this thing. Well, at least with a notebook or a sketchbook, you can flip that page and pretend it doesn't exist or glue it down or pull it out or whatever, right? If you really hate that first thing so much, you can make it magically disappear. But you can't do that with fabric. Like, yes, you can find another piece, but I can kind of see why it would be so overwhelming. But I also think, and I wonder if it's partly because when we're at school as children, when we learn how to do something, there is often a prescriptive set of directions, particularly when we're young, right? To learn your alphabet, you've got to write, like, you know what I mean? Like, so maybe I think part of it is just we've just always been taught how to do something specifically step by step, like it has to be perfect, right?
Yes.
Mountains aren't perfect. Mountains are mountains.
I mean, to continue on with that, I think there's been a huge shift in, at least in America, in education, especially in early childhood, mm-hmm. preschool, kindergarten. You can find a lot of schools, especially in Oregon, my kids are lucky to go to schools like this, where they are not taught that anymore.
Yeah,
they are given a little bit more freedom and they're kind of encouraged to be individuals instead of little robots. But I remember like the worry that if I accidentally skipped step three, that I was going to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I didn't cut exactly on the line, I would cry because I knew people would be disappointed in me. And it absolutely is a real and valid feeling that I think a lot of people feel, especially who are like 30s and older.
Yeah.
I feel like the younger generations don't have that as much because I think that we all learned that and are trying not to pass down that same level of.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad we're seeing an end to that.
And my, like, for example, my 6-year-old, he loves creating fabric collages. And he will come into my office with me and I'll give him a bin of scrap fabric and I will let him cut. And of course it doesn't look perfect, but I just try to encourage him like, oh, look, I'm so proud of you for using your scissors correctly. I'm proud of you for being able to put it into the hoop. I'm glad that you haven't stabbed yourself with this really dull needle that I gave you. And I think just being able to create and feel good about what you create is way more important for youth.
Yeah.
As they kind of try to develop a sense of self. So that fear though, it is so real, which is why I, usually when I do kits, I will give people like a strip of fabric that will stretch across the hoop. That's the way that I teach fabric collage. You don't have to do that. A lot of people won't have it secured that way. It's just the way that I do it. But I will make sure that I give people a couple inches wide of it, which they don't need that much.
Yeah.
So that, and then I encourage people to cut at the utmost top part so that if they mess up, they can just cut further down.
Yeah.
And kind of learn from the first cuts. So, and I have had people who look like they're maybe close to tears, a little like almost frightened still. They just are so terrified to start. And in some cases like that, I will cut a piece of fabric. I'll ask them if they like that layer. And then I will lay my piece of fabric over theirs. so that I have a stencil.
Yep.
And then they can cut around that.
Yeah, nice.
I've also done a collaborative kit with a friend of mine who is a UK-based embroidery artist. Her name's Vika. And we did one together, and she was very overwhelmed by the idea of just telling people to free cut. So then that's the first time I've ever made a stencil where people could cut the layers out and put them down and cut around them. So that I know that that's an option. I've just never really done that, but I know that it is a possibility now that I've done it with her.
Well, see, this is one of these cases where, like, the way you do something is the way you do something. But that doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It's just your way. Like, and this is one of the things I love so much about art is there really isn't a right or a wrong way. You just do what you feel, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think especially when there are a lot of art forms where people are told you have to do it this way or it's wrong.
Yeah.
I think there are just so many of us, especially on social media, like Instagram specifically, who are trying to just push back from what we've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And we've discovered, like, oh, you aren't going to die if you decide to do this in a different order.
Yes. Yes.
No one is coming for me to tell me that I'm terrible.
Yep. As I always say, it's not brain surgery you're doing. So if you get it wrong, no one's life is going to be lost. It's totally okay.
Yes. Well, and I mean, I think art is the easiest way for us to heal our inner child from any kind of, you know, things that we were taught, like what we've been talking about now. I think there are so many of us that, like, I would very much consider myself a perfectionist. I do not like messing up. I will finish something, and if I'm not 100% happy with it, I will tear it apart or I will never show it to anybody. And I'm working on that. I'm trying not to be so hard on myself, because I have, in a couple of instances, I have shared a piece with people that I'm not really happy with just to see. And it's always resounding kind things. People are never criticizing me for the one thing that I see as being out of place. So
we are our own worst enemy. Like, it's just crazy. So yeah, I'm interested in knowing, because you have a good variety of fabric packs available as well as, you know, kits. How do you kind of decide what you wanted to sell in terms of fabric alone? Because I'd imagine that might be a bit different than the actual full kits, or am I sort of thinking wrong with that?
I bundled fabric in a way that they are all fabrics that I will use or have used in my pieces, my original artwork. So the way that I pick them, I'm very lucky. First off, I'm very lucky in the town that I live in the town that's right next to it. So Eugene and Springfield, there are about like 7 different fabric stores or places where I can buy fabric. So there's like the big box stores that a lot of people know about here in the States. But then I am also just incredibly lucky to have a couple small businesses that are family run. And they are amazing. And they carry a lot of high-end fabrics that I think a lot of other people don't have the luxury of shopping in person for. So it's one of the reasons why I decided to start offering fabric packs, is because people would ask me where I got the fabric, and then they'd say, oh, it's too expensive to ship to me, or I can't find that anywhere near me. And so this is kind of my way of trying to help them. And because I think for a lot of people, I do not feel this, but going into a fabric store can be a very overwhelming process for lots of people.
Yes.
I have a lot of friends that say that they get tremendous amounts of anxiety when they walk into a fabric store, because there is almost too much to choose from. So offering fabric packs was a way for me to kind of help people. And when I personally search for fabric, I look for things that are a small enough print that you'd be able to see and tell what it is in an embroidery hoop.
Yeah.
So I don't buy things that have large prints on them, even though they are gorgeous and I want to, but it's unrealistic for me to buy them because you wouldn't be able to tell what it is.
Yeah.
And then it's also just a personal aesthetic of mine. I like incredibly thin lined details in prints. I think that they lend themselves well to landscape art. I look for really striking colors that you would find in nature. or not. I have a celestial pack that I offer that is very much not realistic landscapes. They're more kind of out of this world, but they're really beautiful, fun textiles that have metallic gold on them,
yes,
or have really intricate patterns on them that I find work well in a landscape. So, yeah, most of them I have used recently or have plans to use either in original pieces or in kits. And I, like I said, I'm just really, really lucky. Jean Marie's Fabrics is the store that I buy most of my fabric from, and it is owned by a really lovely family. And they stock just such high quality fabric and a variety of fabric that I know is very unmatched in a lot of fabric stores. I know how lucky I am that I live here. And when I walk in, I shop there pretty regularly now. They know me so well that they will actually set fabric aside that they think I might like.
Oh, I love that.
Because they also know, oh, she likes smaller prints. This looks like a design she might enjoy. I love batik fabrics that have been hand-dyed. So if they get anything in that is new that they think I might like, they'll send me a message or they'll set it aside just because they know that it's something that I'm going to enjoy. And again, I know that that is not a normal experience for most people, and that I have just, I've been really fortunate to live where I am. The community of artists that are in my area is just overwhelmingly amazing, and they are part of that community. So
yes. I'm curious, are the fabrics cotton or are they a blend?
Most of them are 100% cotton. There are some exceptions where I will use something like an organza. So whenever I make like a shimmery water kind of lake, for example, there's usually an overlay that I put on top that's like an organza or a tulle. But all of the fabric packs that I have are 100% cotton. Mm-hmm. And also just printing on fabric has come so far in the last decade, where you can print almost anything on 100% cotton fabric now, which just blows my mind. Yeah. It's a really amazing thing. And the amount of color and the fact that they don't bleed when you wash them is also just incredible to me. So
we haven't touched really on thread, but thread is an incredibly important part of your work as well. What sort of thread do you use? How do you decide on the thread you're going to use? Because I'd imagine it's as big a decision as the actual fabric choices themselves.
Yeah, so it is a hot topic amongst anybody who uses embroidery thread or does any kind of hand sewing. The majority of people use DMC. It is an amazing company. They have fabulous thread. Anchor also has an embroidery line that's pretty wonderful. And those are all like 6-stranded cotton threads. Yep. And they are wonderful. But I actually prefer to use metallic thread, which is... A lot of people think I'm crazy that I prefer that, because metallic thread is thinner. It has a little bit more of an ability to pick up on light, which I like using metallics to pick up on different details within a design. And I find that there's actually a lot of diversity in the kinds of metallic thread that's out there. Oftentimes when I find someone who says that they hate metallic thread, I just say, you haven't learned how to use it properly, or you're using a bad brand.
Well, I mean, it's not anything, isn't it? You know, it's the quality of the material you're using.
Yeah. So most of the threads that I actually like to use that are metallic are not the standard leading companies that make embroidery thread. They are companies that really make thread for machine sewing. A lot of the metallic thread that I love, this hollow shimmer sliver metallics, which is what I use to make the Aurora looking pieces. It's actually like a thin plastic filament that is designed to be used in a sewing machine. So I had never seen anybody use it in hand sewing before. I saw it and purchased it actually to put into a quilt. And I ended up not liking how, I just didn't like how it sewed in mm-hmm. a sewing machine. And so I thought, oh, I wonder if I could use that in hand sewing. So I just tried it. It is in the machine sewing area. It's not by embroidery. And then kind of had some aches and pains of figuring out how to use it because it stretches and breaks a lot easier than like a cotton thread, and just figured out how to use it in a way that it would be workable. So a lot of threads that I use actually are not marketed as being hand sewing thread. Mm-hmm. And then Sulky, so the company that makes that thread,
yep.
also does make a lot of metallic thread, again, in the sewing machine area or all-purpose sewing area. And they are very thin and incredibly smooth and strong. I also enjoy Gutermann, which is a German company. Mm-hmm. Anker also has some metallics. And again, all of them are in the all-purpose or sewing machine thread area.
Yeah.
So it's been funny. And I think that's also one of those things though, about like being a perfectionist and a rule follower. When I bought those originally to use them in hand sewing, I felt like I was going to have someone yell at me at the register the first time that I bought them.
Yeah.
Because it felt like I was breaking some sort of rule that you can mm-hmm. only use this material for the way that it's in its intended purpose. And I'm just so elated now that I see a lot of other artists who are inspired to use them after they see my pieces or have tried them and told me how much they enjoy them or hate them. It started a really fun conversation around metallic threads, but it is very hard for me. I can think of maybe one or two pieces I've ever made that don't have metallic thread.
Yeah.
Almost every piece has at least a little.
Having watched, you know, some of your Instagram reels, stories, whatever, I don't even know anymore. You can pick it. It's like magic. Every time you just move a piece just a tiny bit, the light changes completely. And that's incredible that comes through on a phone screen, on a video. So I can imagine how much more incredible that is in real life.
They are right. And also, I think that says a lot about me as a person. I am that person who gets distracted by something that is shiny or glittery. I am that person. I will always pick the thing that is shiny and glittery and holographic. That is my personality, I feel like. And it very much translates to every single piece of art that I make. I like that I can say that it's a signature.
Yeah, absolutely. So then my brain has now gone to, are you using the same kind of embroidery needle that you would be using if you weren't using the metallic thread, or have we got a whole different needle going on?
I use incredibly small needles compared to most people who do mm-hmm. standard embroidery.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like beading needles because they are very long and thin and break and bend so easily. So I end up using a size 9 or smaller embroidery needle because the head of the needle, the eye of the needle, will fit through a Delica bead or a seed mm-hmm. bead. It's small enough to travel through, but it's still pretty sturdy. So I do use a different needle for metallic threads. The smaller needle, the eye hole on it. Also, it's less likely for, because metallic thread is very slippery, it's less likely to slide out of it mm-hmm. With a smaller eye on the needle. But they are still technically embroidery needles. They're just on the smaller side. If I'm usually doing normal embroidery work with a standard cotton thread, I'll use just a larger needle, like a size 7 or a size 5 needle.
Yep. So where do you think, where to next for what you're creating? Because you spoke of it that you do like to push the traditional ideas of, you know, fine art and also embroidery and what can be created and within landscape itself. Have you sort of, is this something you're working towards, a big endpoint, or are you just kind of, you know, taking each day as it comes and inspiration as it hits, like, or do you have, you know, or are you working towards like a big show of your work? Like, sort of where is your headspace with all that sort of thing?
It's so funny that you asked this question, because up until, honestly, this year, I had been working toward having my art displayed somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to have someone at University of Oregon in the Craft Center. It's one of, I want to say there's like 10 craft centers in the United States that are on universities. They are amazing places. It is just like a candy store for an artist. There are studios within for all different types of art. There's like a ceramics studio. There's jewelry making. There's glass, a textile room, anything you can think of. There's a room in there, wood shop. It's a really phenomenal place. And they had decided to start back up their visiting artist series, where they have an artist come in for a term and display their work in the art an art gallery upstairs, and then teach workshops and give an artist talk. And they asked me, and I have applied to a couple different art shows and galleries, and I've never made it into any of them. You know, that can kind of bruise your ego a little bit.
Yes.
I just tried not to let it affect me. So then all of a sudden having this major university ask me if they would like, telling me that they would like to highlight my work was really, it kind of felt like I had peaked all of a sudden. And so I decided to push myself. I had this idea in my brain for a while to make a piece that was a landscape that was divided amongst a bunch of hoops, but it was all one picture.
Oh, wow.
And I had played around with the idea of it, but I knew it would take an immense amount of work and time. And as a working artist, I didn't really have that time to make something that on a large scale, if it wasn't going to sell right away, because this is what I do to make a living and to support my family.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden I had this opportunity to finally follow through with it, because it was going to be on display somewhere, and I would be getting paid for workshops and things in the meantime. So I spent so many hours in the fall and winter of last year creating 17 different pieces for what I called the Summit of Eugene. It's inspired by pictures that I've taken from the top, and it is very, it's based on those pictures. So it's a lot more realistic than most of my pieces. I decided to go for it and do that. And it's the largest piece of work I've ever made. And it's one piece, even though it's divided in a bunch of different hoops. And then I made it and I put it up, and now I, to be completely honest with you, I don't really know where to go, because that was kind of like mine for a while, and now it's over.
Yep.
My pieces are on display through the rest of this month, and then they're done.
Yeah.
And then I am grateful I've sold a lot of pieces that are on display. The big one, though, I think will come back home, because it does have a high price point, and I didn't necessarily expect it to sell.
Yeah.
I'm going to use it to apply to art shows and hope that maybe I'll get in with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also reached a stage in my career as an artist where I'm known for things.
Yeah.
Which I know is really special, and I treasure that, and it's very sacred to me. And so people ask, they make a lot of requests. When are you going to bring sunsets and sunrises back? When are you going to do moonscapes again? When are you going to do floral pieces again? I couldn't buy one last time. And I'm very lucky that my pieces sell pretty quickly. I don't have a lot of art on hand. And again, I know that that's like a really special and unique thing. I know that not all artists can say that. And so now I think this year I'm going to just work on revisiting series and collections that I've done in the past and kind of revamping them, renewing, you know, adding more pieces to that ever-growing collection.
Mm-hmm.
And to be completely honest with you, I think this year I'm more focused on continuing to grow my relationship with other artists, because I've found that the artist community will give back as much as you put into it. It's a really powerful thing to be able to talk to humans across the world and connect through art. That has opened so many doors for me on its own. So I want to focus on that. And I also just want to remind people that even though it's a full-time job of mine, and I've heard people refer to me as being like an influencer on social media, which I don't really feel comfortable with, but because I'm just a normal person. But having a platform like that, I'm also trying to shift a little bit. I've always been pretty transparent about how I'm feeling and the reality of being a full-time artist, but I'm trying to listen to my advice more this year. last year, I really worked myself into the ground because posting 2 or 3 times a day on 3 or more social media platforms every day and making pieces to sell and making kits and trying to keep my website up, it's exhausting and not sustainable. And so I made that huge piece in December. I turned it in. They displayed it. I had a very like guttural cry of just like a release of all of this hard work. And I finally let myself rest a little bit. And I took pretty much all of January and almost all of February off. I just shared some things on social media just so that I would still have a presence, but I wasn't being as like focused on social media and growing and sharing things. And I focused more on my family and on my mental health and on finding joy in creating art again. And I've realized that I just need to make sure that I do that on a regular basis so that I don't get burned out again.
Yeah. It's incredibly important.
Yeah. And again, I recognize that it's important to rest. It's important to not feel pressured to post every single day. I share those things. I talk about burnout all the time. And then here I am staying up until 2 a.m. stitching every day to try and get a piece done. I mean, so I'm trying not to be a hypocrite. I'm trying to be realistic. So this year is a lot more focused on me just trying to be as real and vulnerable as an artist as possible. And I hope that means my creative juices will still flow. But I think ultimately the goal is for me to be able to create art and not lose the drive and love of it.
Well, I don't think you're being a hypocrite. I think you're being a human being, and it's totally okay to say one thing and do another, because literally I think we all do. That is just part of the human condition, and that is okay.
Thank you.
Oh, look, Hannah, I'm so inspired from this conversation. Like, I need to run away and just sit down and sew. Like, I love these chats, these conversations so much. It is an absolute.
I do too. I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast because it does give you that feeling of just like sitting down with friends and talking about real life stuff as artists. And it is a very refueling thing. So thank you for letting me be a part of it.
Thank you. It's my absolute pleasure. Let's finish up by telling the listeners, where can they find you? Where can they go to see your work, to buy your work if they want, or kits, or just get inspiration or be influenced by you?
I love that. My website is needleorthread.com, and that's where you can see, I have like an art gallery viewing, basically, where you can see a lot of my past work and then any of the products, original artwork, fabric packs, kits, all of that you can find there. And then on almost all social media, if you just type needle or thread, I will pop up. It's on Instagram, I'm needle_or_thread. But if you just type in needle or thread, I pop up because I have a pretty large account on Instagram. And then also in my link in Instagram has links to everything else. So if you just click in the bio there, you can find me everywhere else. But I'm also on YouTube and on Facebook and on TikTok and on Clubhouse and on Twitter. I don't post on some of them as regularly, but the joys of being a full-time working artist is I market myself as many places as I can. So, and I love connecting with people. So if anybody listens to this and wants to connect with me, I am a person who responds to messages. I do like talking to people and making new connections. So I always encourage people to shoot me a message and say hi.
Well, thank you, Hannah. That it's just been an absolute delight to speak to you.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun. And I am just so honored that you asked me to be a part of it. So thank you for asking.
My pleasure.